Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
If you're not my girlfriend, I'm not calling an Uber.
Rich, you can chime in off camera, by the way.
I don't agree with that, actually.
I think circumstantially there's things that would make me, in my adult years, call an Uber. Whereas before it was never. That was always off the table. Right. Well, like now, if I take her out and she's like, hey, I don't want to spend the night. I have an early morning and it's like 3-4 in the morning. And we've been out since like 7 p.m. or like whatever. All right, I'll get you the car.
Yeah, like if that scenario, late night, like if she's like, if a girl's in my apartment, right, and it's 3 a.m. and like, and if like, if she like wanted to go home earlier, but she ended up staying long, it'd be a nice gesture. I would do it. It's fine.
They can't,
you know what I mean?
Safely take the subway. You should call them Uber.
Well, according to Twitter or X, whatever, subway's never safe.
Yeah. And I think the older you get also, it's a bit of like, if I can afford it, and it's like that, not a big thing.
It's not a matter of affordability. I hate that as an excuse when girls try to throw that in your face of like, oh, what are you... Are you broke? It's like, no, I'm just, yeah, you can't, like, that's not an incentive for me to be like, no, I'm not, bitch. Here's a $200 car. No, like, you're not going to get me with that. Like, no, that's not how that works.
That's like the modern day of like, you won't pussy.
But before we started recording, you said this girl tried to get you to call an Uber for her to meet other people.
Yeah. And like, mind you, we've been on like 2 dates and.
Were they really even dates?
Like, no, one was an actual, like, was a proper Hinge meetup date.
You took her in public? Jesus.
Dude, I didn't know the whole
situation. I told you this situation.
This was before. Like, this was before you told me this situation. And then after the date, I was like, yo. I was like, and then after the date, I saw the mutual, and I was like, nah. Like, everyone has those, like, 3 or 4 friends that if you see the mutual, you're like...
I've been told from a few guys that if they see that I'm friend, which isn't always the case.
No,
I don't like that. Yeah. Well, in that case, you're right. But I'm saying like in most cases, like another friend of ours, you know, say his name. He always texts me when he matches with a girl or like has or goes to an Instagram and sees me. And he's always like, did you? And 99% of the time I have not. I have this like weird thing where I will talk to somebody. I think I get the thrill of it just from like offlining off the dating app if we met there, getting that Instagram, and then like occasionally establishing our dynamic and then sending like memes or like dumb shit that reminds me of this.
Yeah.
Our thing, like our Instagram thread is just 9/11 memes. You're one of my closest friends. It is purely 9/11 content. So for a girl, if I find that niche thing, like this girl loves cats, I'll send... Or 9/11. Cats and 9/11. I'll funnel...
9/11 for cats.
Yeah. That's the second cat has hit the tower. Well, I'll just funnel all cat content. Like, I will literally compartmentalize people. It's probably sick in the head. As, like, a joke or a filter for, like, this is my cat person.
Yeah.
Literally. I see a 9/11... Like, that jacket I saw in public when I was going to the Knicks game. And the guy had, like, a never forget 9/11. I took a photo. I was like, Raph, duh. Like, I send it to you. So, it was very... Yeah. Anyway...
No, sometimes I want to send you shit, and I'm like, I can't, because it's not 9/11 oriented.
He'll send me stuff. He'll send me stuff, and then see that I've seen it, and then delete it to keep the feed pure.
The integrity of our DM is very just like, it's all 9/11 jokes.
Yeah. What is this? This is awful. I'm like losing my voice. It's a bit of a rolling start. I'm here with... welcome to episode 29, I think, if something wrong with the podcast. I'm just doing new shit, new scenery, still in the same building, whatever. This is Raph No Simmons, Rafael Nadal.
When my hair is long, my brother calls me Rapunzel.
Rapunzel's a good one. But Raph is a very good friend of mine. We met here in New York, and he's also an expert in my expert on all things AI related content. We do have like how we just started here, the banter to just kind of ramble about women and nonsensical stuff, which we will do. But I also wanted to give Raph this space and time to talk about a field that I've stepped in at the early part of the year, and a field that he's far more educated and versed on, is the world of AI and AI technology. So we were talking off camera, and we can get into what you're building later, but like about the lack of the push for AI content, which can lead to like deepfakes and like augmented reality thing and all these things that kind of like an erasure of reality from the internet, and it kind of becomes more curated based on who's paying the most for the most bots that can spread X agenda. Mm-hmm. So what, like, first of all, how the hell did we get to that point, and why is that the new norm when we were speaking a little bit ago that it used to be social media in particular used to just be a space for everybody to have a voice and everybody just, like, you know, yeah, share news, joke, etc. Used to be a great platform for real journalism.
Yeah, like when social networks popped up in the first place, you know, 10, 15 years ago, these platforms were really fun, exciting spaces. We all made Facebook accounts or MySpace accounts, lied about our ages to get on them. All our friends were on them. The idea of bots, like, wasn't...
No, I didn't think.
It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And so these platforms didn't measure success or build guardrails in to check for a problem that wasn't a problem yet.
Yeah.
And the hamster wheel kind of started spinning. These companies went public on certain metrics around, like, engagement numbers and user growth. And so, like, if user growth is being jet fueled by bots, like, they're not going to stop it if it's not hitting the bottom line. Yeah, does it diminish your experience on the platform? Yeah, but, like, there isn't another option. So I don't really care.
But does... I guess I'm asking this because we've already gotten to this point, but, like, in terms of the user experience, which I guess at what point does the user experience become secondary to the, I guess, the shareholders is what I should be saying.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's a hard turn. Everything starts with the right intentions, the great idea, the impetus of all these apps is to connect people mm-hmm. around the world, share stories. We've seen stories of Facebook of long lost cousins and lost siblings connecting, and it's all these, like, yeah, beautiful memories. And then, you know, in the last 12 years, we've seen it influence and possibly destroy an election, most likely destroy an election here in the United States. Like, what is the turn from the purity of what these things are? Is it just because humans got into it and they're like, all right, bet it's up? Like, I feel like once you give humans that autonomy to, like, use it in the way in which they want to, they will find a way to ruin it.
I think that I hold more optimism than that. I think that...
Fine, I'll play heel.
Yeah. There's two things that I think cause these platforms to erode over time. One is the business model. The business model isn't to make a good user experience. The business model is to be business friendly and to be addictive. If that's a business model, it will inevitably always reach the same conclusion, no matter what the intentions of the founders were.
But do you think Facebook, at its core, when it first began, even MySpace, certainly Tom from MySpace, I don't think he sought out for this to be an addictive
thing. No, but it also didn't make money.
He didn't make money. He sold that shit for like half a bill.
Right. I mean, but like the platform's revenue model wasn't like it got sold at an inflated speculative price on the opportunity of, you know, monetizing it down the line.
Okay.
Like Facebook, when it wasn't making money, was really good because it wasn't prioritizing or designing around these addictive features. And when you're hitting the engagement numbers you want to hit because you've built the most optimized recommendation feed, you know what that content actually is, how that content actually makes you feel, is secondary because that's the way the model was set up in the first place.
Yeah,
they don't solve the bot problem because it's not financially, you know, responsible of them to their shareholders who have valued the company at a certain number because of the certain amount of users that exist. They're not going to change that because it would shake the number, it would shake the expectation.
Got you. Okay, so sorry, you were saying the turn becomes purely business focused and addiction focused,
right? Because these companies are built by a handful of engineers that are really smart and really pure intention, and then they need more money, so they go to a big VC and they say, hey, we need money. The VC has a timeline saying, okay, like, you know, this is a great idea, I love the app, but you gotta make money in 5 years. You gotta make a lot because I'm giving you a bunch of money. How are you gonna do that? And all these Facebook was the first one to answer the call saying, we're going to do ads, we're going to target users, we're going to use behavioral data, we're going to do all that. And every platform since then has just copied them. They haven't tried to make money a different way.
Are there ways in which they could make money that would be, I guess, for lack of a better, more ethical towards the user experience?
Yeah, but it would be less money, probably. It would be, you'd have to basically say, hey, we're not going to build a hyper addictive platform that we can, you know, shove hyper optimized content in your face. Some people think, oh, like, you know, if as long as it's free, the user is the product. I don't really believe in that. I think that there's other ways to think about these things. But, you know, some people say like, oh, you should make users pay a subscription fee, and then there is none of this predatory stuff. But why would I pay for something that's already free, even though it's not the best? It's free. So you have to be more creative on it.
But is that not a model that's been adopted by like streaming services? You can pay, or even YouTube without ads, or if mm-hmm. you pay a little more, it's a free service, but if you pay a little more, we'll make it a little better for you.
I think that the data that these platforms get and how they sell and reuse it is so valuable that they don't want to give you that option. With the amount of consolidated power these companies have and their ability to control information flow, it's also about control. You know, there's a really awesome podcast. Sorry to plug in another podcast here.
I'm bleeping it. No, it's fine.
Yeah, but I'll say it was the CEO of Telegram was on a podcast.
Just say it. I don't give a shit what the podcast.
It was the Tucker Carlson podcast.
Oh, all right, cool. Yeah. I rock with Tucker now, actually.
He has, like, I used to not like
what a turn.
Dude, what a turn 2025.
I talk about, first of all, anyone can be bought. For those that don't know, Tucker Carlson was a CNN, before Fox.
Oh, he was
on CNN. He was blue. He was a Democrat head for a while. He had a bad sour outing with them, turned heel, went Fox. And then, obviously, rinse and repeat, Fox threw him by the wayside. And now he's like, fuck it, it's up with all you bitches. Trump, too. And now he's like the arbiter of truth all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And because now we're seeing, which is cool to see someone in that demo. Like, I even hope of this for Colbert, but to do this with all those moving parts would be nearly impossible with that level of overhead. But Don Lemon's done it. I'm not saying he's done it well, but Don Lemon's also done it where you're leaving the major news network and pivoting to your own brand mm-hmm. and propping up your own YouTube channel, your own, you know, long form content on YouTube, X, posting on shorts. Like, if you see Don Lemon, that motherfucker's just walking around the street with a microphone being like, so tell me your thoughts. He'll go in like black neighborhoods and be like, so tell me your thoughts on Trump's tax brackets. And I was like, what? She's like, why Don Lemon? Like, what? But like, that's, if you go to his content, that's all he does, is just go up to people in the street. He's like, I was gonna say, he's like they're both gay, but like, you know, Billy Eicher, like the guy, like Billy in the street. Yeah. It's like that, but for politics. So just like put a mic in your face and be like, talk about Gaza. She's like, I'm out on lunch.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, yeah. So, but anyway, that's, yeah.
I love that. You know, that's one of the best parts about the internet is that, you know, we have these pockets of people that, you know, have made their money or have enough money. And they, or this, because of, they're not tied to any publication or institution, they have a bit more credibility when you like that, maybe you don't agree with them, but that's their voice and that's their opinion.
There's more of an authenticity to it, which can be either good or bad. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing the extreme end of that is that Nick Fuentes asshole with like the 6-inch thumbs. You know that guy?
Netanyahu on the podcast? That was
yeah. I made maybe 10, 15 minutes of that, and then I turned it off. It was brutal. And then the only clip where they pushed back was when homie said, I like Burger King, and they were like, whoa. I think the legit quote was, that might be the wildest thing you said today. I'm like, that's where you lost you 45 minutes in? To excusing a genocide, and you're like, bro, Burger King, that's where you... All right, cool. So anyway, we know what's going to be built in Gaza, fast food-wise, once they clear it out.
McDonald's.
A lot of Burger Kings.
But yeah, to circle back around to the reason I mentioned the podcast thing, was that the CEO of Telegram, which is, to those that aren't familiar, it's a end-to-end encrypted messaging app. He built it so that way, you know, I can text Julian and no one can see it.
Because some of the messages also delete after time, or is that just Signal?
I think that might be Signal.
Okay.
Telegram was built as just like fully end-to-end encrypted, like my device and your device. Like, think about like to launch a nuke, there's like two keys.
Yeah, definitely.
that's like how that, like, no one person can basically, like, it requires more than one person.
Yeah.
At least for like nuclear, like submarines. That's how Telegram texts work. So like, it takes both of our phones to decrypt the message.
Got it.
So that communication decrypts it. So like, the CEO of Telegram cannot read your message. It requires like
permission.
It requires permission from the user.
Yeah.
Or like a government seizes a phone because that person's a criminal, and then.
But if they seize a phone, could they get access to Telegram messages? No.
Well, if the person had decided to biometrically lock Telegram on their phone. Like, if they know your password and they have access to your phone, they can access Telegram.
Got it.
On your phone.
Yeah.
But you can tie an app to like Face ID if you wanted to. But it's on your phone, so it's encrypted by the devices. He said in an interview that he tried to do Telegram in America and he couldn't.
How? What? Elaborate.
Basically, the governments, the FBI, CIA, constantly tried to compromise his employees and build backdoors in to have access and control over Telegram. So anytime there's a big tech company in America, the government likely has a hand in it, or has a backdoor into it. Maybe not through the CEO, but it's legal for the CIA to build a backdoor into your company and not tell you about it.
What are those? You're saying backdoor. What does that imply? What does that mean in terms of in practice?
Like, just think about it this way. It's like someone has a backdoor to your house and they can access whatever they want. Like they can access.
So they can kind of, okay.
They can see all the data, all the behavioral data, all the messages, whatever they want. And so that exists. It's legal in America for the CIA to go to one of your employees and ask them to build a backdoor into your company and not tell the CEO about it. And they could pay that employee has to consent.
I was going to say, but the employee has to, but do they grease that employee or is it just like,
yeah, they can do whatever they want.
But is it like common practice for the CIA to pick out somebody and be like, yo, here's $200,000. Shut the fuck up. Let us into the, let's see what's going on. Don't tell anybody else.
They wanted to go that route. It's the CIA. It's FBI. Yeah. So he moved. He left America. He took Telegram. He left.
And where's Telegram based of now?
It was in France for a while, but I think it's in Saudi Arabia now. Huh. Saudi Arabia is like, actually, there's like, yo, like we like do whatever you want. You
know? Yeah, yeah. Clearly.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't think surveillance and human rights are a priority for Saudi Arabia at this point.
Yeah. Later. I was listening to another podcast. I'm just kidding. That's all we're going to do is just reference podcast moments. It's called Why Theory. Actually, a girl recommended it to me over the weekend. And I listened to an episode on common sense. And it was really interesting. I'm going to butcher the theory that they laid out. But it was basically like which social media plays a large part in. And they were saying they're not Trump supporters, but they're saying Trump does a very good job of. They said common sense is just a matter of the public turning and agreeing on something. There's no inherent, you know, common sense changes over time. Right. Like what used to be, you know, we can say it more in practice with like laws, like common. I'm trying to think of like of an example, but point is it changes over time. And what Trump does a great job of is he doesn't speak of things that he wants to implement in terms of them being the unpopular opinion. Mm-hmm. He speaks it outward and like this is the reality is what I'm saying. Right. It's not, and he also does a really good job of not even acknowledging the current common sense. He's very much, whereas the Democrats have this fucking problem of acknowledging all these things and then including that into their vision of the future and what they want to do forward. Mm-hmm. Whereas Trump's just like, fuck all that. This is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And they were saying how social media in particular plays a very important part in that messaging for Trump because he does a really good job of, whether it be through his pundits, like the Nick Fuentes guy that I mentioned earlier, or that other piece of shit. What's the one guy that just goes to college camp? Charlie Kirk. Oh, dude. So he has like real humans doing it, but also bots just like throwing the, you know, messaging out as well, which I always find fascinating. And I've said this 100 times, especially to Rich. The Republicans are cooking the shit out of the Democrats in terms of messaging online. Yeah. Dominating the meme war. They put so much money into pages that I don't follow. If you'd think, if you grab my phone, I was a right-wing conspiracy theorist because all the suggested content is just all pro-Trump and pro, you know, right-wing conspiracy talking points, where in fact that's not where I lie at all, like right. Politically or ethically.
Right.
But they do such a good job of hitting certain pages that touch every demographic that it's unavoidable.
Yeah. I think that when it comes to like Republicans versus Democrats in the online war, Republicans are 100% winning, and they're very good at stating what they are doing or are going to do as it's already either happened or it should happen, or it, you know, like they kind of make it seem like common sense.
Yeah, they're pushing the normal by just stating it over and over again. Mm-hmm. So like you just you at for a certain point forget that wasn't always the norm.
I think it's like called the law of exposure or something.
Yeah.
Where the more you're exposed to something, the more you just get used to it. And yeah. Democrats don't wield that enough. Like Republicans can pretty much do whatever the hell they want, and all they're going to get is a strongly worded letter from the Democrats if the Democrats don't like it. It's like, no, we didn't like that. That was mean. But like, they don't really take a lot of action. I think there are definitely people in the Democratic Party that are starting to, you know, learn that, you know, partisanship or sorry, like bipartisanship or, you know, any sense of decency is completely gone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when Hillary was in her last, no, not Hillary, sorry. Damn.
Yeah, she didn't win.
Yeah, she didn't win. When Biden was in his last, like, in his lame duck year, when he was his last year in office, they didn't let him elect a Supreme Court nominee because, like, oh, like, you're on your way out, you shouldn't be allowed to. But Trump can do it, too. Trump can do it.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, that's an example of, like, Republicans just play by different rules.
They just create the rules. That's the thing. The Democrats have this, like, stronghold of preserving something that is ever changing. These, you know, and they have this, like, moral compass that shoots them in the foot more often than it does for the Republicans because they don't give a shit, which is, you know, I can go on and on about that.
But. Or, you know, both are playing to the ultra elites and the Democrats are coincidentally being lame ducks. And
it's good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, a little good cop, bad cop.
They're both bad.
They're both bad.
Should we talk about Sydney Sweeney's racist tits?
Dude. I mean, I wonder if you did a statistical poll on white women with big boobs and how many of them are Republicans.
We should. Can you create a model that measures that? And them? measures them.
We got to throw blonde in there too. Blonde white girls.
Blonde, yeah. Blonde, so we're saying girls. Within the, are we, we're creating a model that just specifically measures the Sydney Sweeney demo.
Yeah.
Blonde, white girl.
Like, it didn't surprise me that much. I mean, I feel like a lot of people thought that our generation was going to be more left.
Wait, what do you mean surprise? What are you saying? That she's not saying anything. She didn't do anything. And I know, like, she comes from, like, a Republican. But, like, in practice, for this campaign, she did nothing more than the job itself.
No, yeah.
I'm not throwing blame on Sydney Sweeney at all.
Not
this.
At all.
No.
Not at all. I think it was an oversight. Like, a PR. Like she shouldn't have caught it. Her manager should have caught it.
Do you think the implication was intentional?
No.
With how it's been getting chastised?
No, I think people are overblowing the shit out of it. I think that it was stupid. And there was an ad for, like, I think it was a black woman in a jeans ad, like, 20 years ago.
She did it's a remake of the classic ad, yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's what they were thinking. And they're like, oh, who's popular and hot? Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah.
They didn't think about, like, subtext that people would pull from it, but, like, I don't think that it was deliberate at all. I think that they're pulling the Republican thing out as like a see Republican has to be racist.
Oh yeah. That they checked her voting registry.
Yeah. I think that it's,
that was known about. Remember when Euphoria was a thing and there, I remember, I mean, this is years ago when Trump was running and there was that era where everyone was scrubbing every young actor's socials for who they were registered to. And that got brought up years ago that Sydney Sweeney, and for the record, I'm not saying if you're a Republican you support Donald Trump. Being a registered Republican doesn't mean you need to support that man or his office or anything. I know friends that are registered Republicans that ended up voting Democrat because of his first term in office.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not throwing smut just because she's a registered Republican, but if that's the crux of this is to just kill her, because it certainly doesn't help that Trump stepped in and is like, now did you see his message?
No.
Oh, I'll pull it up. Dude, it's actually insane.
I think that when it comes to like celebrities achieving a certain level of fame, people want to tear them down. Like you can make the case for like Pedro Pascal too, honestly, where it's like,
yeah,
they hit a certain level of like general allure, probably from the opposite sex, where just hate bubbles up and then they just like wait for the chance to tear them down.
Yeah, well, this was Trump posted this on Truth Social. I want to say today, Sydney Sweeney, and this is so brilliant of him to weaponize this. Sydney Sweeney, a registered Republican, has the hottest, in all caps, ad out there. It's for American Eagle, and the jeans are flying off the shelves. Go get them, Sydney. By the way, you spelled Sydney wrong in this entire. On the other side of the ledger, Jaguar did a stupid and seriously woke advertisement that is a disaster. Are you familiar with that one?
No.
Jaguar did like a rebranding of their logo and it's like very pride flag coded and inclusive. No. And everyone was like, Jaguar's gay. That was like the, you know, the right wing take of. So then he continues. The CEO just resigned. The company is in turmoil. Shouldn't they have just learned the lesson from Bud Light, which went too woke and essentially destroyed, in short, but very woke campaign, in short, but very woke campaign the company. Basically saying they did the same thing Bud Light did. The market cap destruction has been unprecedented. Billions of dollars lost. Or just look at the woke Taylor Swift. Just bring her up out of nowhere.
The most successful artist.
Yeah. Ever since I alerted the world as to what she she was saying on Truth, that I can't stand her. You just threw that a shot in at her for no reason, which was also kind of incoherent and made no sense. But point is, like, it's sad how it's corny as fuck for it's corny as fuck for the internet to take this and run with it to the extent that they are. And it's super lame as shit for Trump and all his, like, you know, cronies to then jump on and be like, oh, look, we got the hot one. Because now, you know, the whole internet debate of, like, here's what a liberal woman looks like. Here's what it's like a picture of Kamala's daughter, which is like, that's fucked up. Like, versus this is what American bitches look like. It's like, all right, bro. Like, my question is, who is that for? Who does that work on?
I think it's, you know what, like, honestly, and this comes back to, like, our whole social media conversation. Like, I wonder how much of that's fake.
What do you mean?
Like, I wonder how much of that buzz on the internet is just entirely bot driven.
So I think the, obviously the story and the truth of it with the ad, and obviously now Trump's message as well, is real. I think you're right. I think because I did this on a more ethical level for a record label, it's like when an artist would put out a song and, like, these many plaques on the wall here, like this song in particular, Opstoppa from YBN Namir, was a sound from an old song of his on TikTok. It was like a 6-year-old song, but someone on TikTok posted it. It got like 10,000 plays or like recreates. And we were like, oh shit, like there's something happening here. Let's throw some fire on this. Let's fuel it up. So we ran like a campaign, like got paid dancers and pages to repost it with the audio. Mm-hmm. A few months later, song goes gold. You get a 21 Savage feature, song goes platinum. So, like, I think these are real in this instance with the city tweet. These are real things. These are real moments that's happening. It's just what levers are being pulled to then, via bot pages, via influencer, you know, ads, to then take it to the next level.
I mean, I think that, like, going the organic route, like what you did.
But we paid. Record, it's organic paid or not.
Real people, and then whether or not it was, like, received well. You can't. You're not manufacturing that. But I think when it comes to, like,
meme pages too, culture, meme pages too.
Yeah.
By which, like, aren't bots, but, like, you can influence, like the academics page. I mean, these are pages we used to pay. It's pay to play. You pay academics at rap bars, like all those, like, major hip hop accounts that people follow for general rap news. A lot of those posts are paid.
Yeah.
So how? My question, I guess, is how is that any different than, you know, bursting that out to a bot? I think what's bot.
Different is in, like, the how it's received. Like, when you go to an influencer, you're already like, there's an understanding that, you know, a lot of their stuff's paid for. But when you're interacting with what you think is a human on an app, and that person's upset about something, you think there's a real person behind that who's actually upset about something. But I think because bots change this entirely, because bots make it so that you're being actively lied to and manipulated.
But I think you're challenging more the message itself. But, like, I'm thinking that the method in which the message is getting pushed is more or less, I mean, I can text someone right now and say, hey, I got $5,000. I could get this clip of us talking about this and say, I need this posted across, you know, 20 channels. And yes, like, someone is pushing the pitting post to post those things, but it's like, I don't see the difference between that and just buying a bot farm and doing it that way. I mean, is it ethical because I'm texting a person and I'm paying them? They're also paying for the bots.
Well, if you're paying for bots to post something, post a clip of you, that's one thing.
But how's that any different than me giving academics $5,000 to make the same post?
No, those are the same. I'm saying the only difference, like, the thing that's different to me is, like, when it comes to, like, replying, commenting, and interacting, that shouldn't be laden with bots. Like, posting stuff, like posting a video of us talking on 20 things and having a bot do it, yeah, it's fine. It's part of the game. I don't see that as.
So you're saying the engagement,
because people know you're doing it.
So you're saying the engagement within the post is what.
Yeah, it's the transparency of the online social interaction. I think that's the part where I draw the moral line. I think that, you know, these algorithms and platforms are set up in a way where you have to leverage influencers, you have to leverage trends, you have to leverage, you know, how it works. That's fine, but I think the second that you pretend to be the consumer, and the second you manufacture, like, the reception of something, or
we do. Okay, another example from a label.
Okay,
fuck it, I'll throw it all under the bus. At the label, we would, anytime you want to break a young artist, you have to have that perceived notion of success. It's what Tekashi 6ix9ine did that eventually cracked, I think, in like Turkey or wherever it popped for him before translating to the U.S. audience. What a lot of we do with a lot of young artists is when they create their YouTube page, they're starting from scratch. YouTube is one of the hardest algorithms to get in your favor, to warm up and, like, you know, build a following. So what labels do is they'll run these YouTube ad campaigns, which is basically just paid views. And what I would say, and what a lot of people at the label and team would say, is these are purely vanity metrics. So when people consume this content and come across their pages, it's like, oh shit, there's this young popping artist out of New York, but he's got two videos, but they both got, you know, over a million views. He must be the shit. But how many of those views are actually, the page was made last month. None of those views are authentic views.
I think that's wrong. Yeah, it's
by the way, I'm not excusing it, but I'm challenging you to,
like, the same way that, you know, with the Drake Kendrick beef, how there was claims about, like, inflating, you know, like, I like Kendrick. I'm a Kendrick fan.
Yeah.
And there's claims that he was inflating some numbers, claims that Drake was inflating some numbers.
My point is that's the nature of the industry is inflation. So I think that's a really lame strike for Drake to cast on Kendrick, because that is shit. Drake has had more of those opportunities and things on his behalf than I would say than any other artist. So I never liked that angle, because as someone that knows how this shit works, you can't fabricate Drake being number one and being that successful. So, like, pouring gas on a raging fire is like, yeah, he's already bigger than the Beatles. Fuck it. Let's just keep, you know what I mean? Like, keep the perception at a whole nother level. Like, I don't think it's smart for him to say, lob that against Kendrick as if it's like a slight, when the entire industry does that.
I think that, like, I understand, like, if you're in that industry and you feel like you have to do it and you do it, I'm not going to judge you for it. For me, it's like, if we're talking about, like, ideals on the matters, I think that just because everyone lies about their height on Hinge doesn't mean you should. You know what I mean? That makes sense?
Yeah, but it's...
crazy analogy.
Well, it's like, I guess, like, the... Because there's also... Like, the way in which that can be combat, like, my thing, like, just in general with catfishing or height fishing, hat fishing, all the types of fishing, is as soon as you meet the person, you can sniff out the truth of the bio, of the profile. But in music, it's, you can't, how are you as a consumer going to see that this video has a million views? Maybe it has really low likes and very few comments, which is a pretty good sign that it's bullshit. But it's never going to get to that point where it's like, I know this is bullshit. Whereas, like, if I pull up to a date and, you know, I'm like, I'm 6'3", and I get there and I'm like, clearly not, she'll be like, okay, like, this is... She'll have to make the decision to be like, okay, he's lying, but I'll see this through. Or he's lying and I don't trust this, I'm leaving.
I think that I understand the difference, and it's totally fair. And so my counterpoint is, if I'm a record label and I'm inflating the metrics to make this artist famous and the algorithm picks it up, like, everything about that is a computer except for the artist.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Not for long.
Well, we've seen artists, AI artists in Spotify, like Timbaland has a whole deal that he's helping. He's working with AI generative producers and artists. I forget which label. I don't want to throw Sony under the bus. It could be Sony. But point is, like, yes, that's existing as well. So,
right. So when you're... So is that going to be okay when everyone starts doing that?
I'm vehemently against that, because it's not... At least in my example, the artist, no matter how big or small, is still authentically making the product. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So much of music, especially in rap, is convincing your audience that you're the shit and you're bigger than you ever were, even though nobody knows who the fuck you are. So like Migos talks about this a lot when they were doing interviews when they were younger. I think Quavo or Offset would often say, all I wore was fake jewelry because I wanted people to think that, you know, I'm this guy that's got shit popping in my hood when everything on my neck was turning the back of my neck green. Like, it's all perception based. Mm-hmm. So the hope is you put enough money behind the perception that the gap goes from this to this to this to they may finally meet one day. And you're like, I'm as big as I've been telling you I was. And now, like, ticket sales show that, and like real streaming data shows that.
I understand that. I just think that there's such a focus on it, and it's like, you know, I can't wave a wand and change society at large, but it's a reflection of what we value as far as like, oh, like, I don't like an artist unless other people like the artist.
Well,
that's just kind of sad.
I've had too much time on my hands to like research and look into this stuff. So then I was reading another article about the flip now of, now when we go to an Instagram post, say I send you a meme, what's the first thing you do when I send you a meme?
Look at the likes.
Well, not only that, no, but comments. Like the comment. Yeah. So now it's not even a matter of how good is the song, or in this case, how good is the meme that I've been sent. I need to go even further and be like, I'm engaging now. The comment culture is now involved,
right,
and it matters just as much as the piece of content itself.
Right.
I've sent memes to my friends and just wrote comments.
Yeah.
So they know to then go read the comments because they're fucking amazing. So it's like, we care. I'm bringing this up because there's such a matter of care between the group think and like, what do others think about this piece of content, mm-hmm, before I decide if I like it or not. So if I'm pumping money, tens of thousands of dollars per single into this guy that no one knows, but I'm giving you the perception that people fuck with it, who's to say, you know what I mean? That's
like, I would say that I think it'd be better for the longevity of the artist. And yeah, you can like play the algorithm roulette game and hope that it gets picked up, or you could do what you talked about with pushing this album, the one you talked about earlier, where it's like, oh, you paid influencers, you paid people to push it to their audiences. If you're a label, you have artists with audiences, use them.
I think this is in the use case of me doing the best version of my job is finding something that was existing in very niche target demo, mm-hmm, in spreading it to a larger audience. I think that's, yeah, there's purity, and like I'll defend that kind of marketing 1,000%. But in theory, the tactic is the same.
It's similar. I think there's a small difference for me is the manufactured engagement.
Like I paid, and by I, the label, we paid like I think $10,000 or $15,000 for a TikTok campaign, and I had to try the choice to make two options. I had the choice to go with a micro influencer campaign, which means anywhere from like 100,000 to 500,000 followers on Instagram, mm-hmm, on TikTok, and they would all create. I would get like 10 to 15 influencers to dance to the record, or, because this is what was great about the songs, there was a dance, which we didn't. A lot of times labels try to fabricate a dance, or like, you just be you, be creative, and whichever dance sticks, we'll push. We had a fucking dance. So that's how I knew this was going to work. Some black girl, I think, did the dance and it stuck. So then I would send that video as, say, hey, your influencer has to do this dance when they make that video. So they would do that. And the other option, option B, was we run a macro campaign, which is influencers of 1 million or more. Mm-hmm. Your Addison Rae's, your Charli D'Amelio's, at that time they were, you know, much hotter. TikTok was more of a thing. This is years ago. This, mm-hmm, is during the pandemic. And I opted for the micro. My goal was to always cast a wider net. These guys have great followings, for the hopes that organically one of these big dogs will see that it's popping and pick it up, because there's always the hunt of who's first in the macro community. I'd rather pay for the smaller guys to do it because someone over there is going to pick it up.
Right.
Option B will in turn pay for itself. So yeah, we post, we get all these influencers over the course of, and there's also two ways to go about this. I'm just literally, if you're a digital marketer, listen to this. I'm giving you all the sauce. There's two, there's methods that people go about this. You can either blitz it over 1 week or a few days. Everybody posts at the same time. No. I will space this out over 3 weeks. Give me a post or two a week. Other people will pick it up. and we're building organic traction on top of the paid posts that we make over the course of 3 weeks. Sure enough, as soon as our campaign ends, Addison Rae picks it up, does the dance, and then we fucking skyrocket. I think Charlie may have done it. We didn't pay a dime for either of them. Point is, like, that to me is like a proper marketing strategy. But I could have just paid for them to do it.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like a pick your, you know, choose your own moral journey.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's definitely, it's harder to do it the way you did it. I also think it's more rewarding to do it that way. Probably for you.
I was very confident in that strategy. Yeah. Because there was a dance, I knew it would work.
Yeah.
I've worked Jason Derulo records where I would have $500,000 budget on TikTok alone. You can't fabricate something that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like, especially on TikTok. Whereas
you can't, like, pay a bunch of girls to make up a dance.
Doesn't work. It doesn't work. It does not work. They gave us a hashtag. They said, we'll give you guys a hashtag for the song to promote it. They gave us everything. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I got off on that tangent. But the world of fake has been, I think, it's so universally used across every, you know, and certainly in entertainment.
Yeah, in entertainment, I think that there's a huge financial incentive to use it, like direct financial incentive to use it.
Yeah.
I also think that it gets leveraged, like when it comes back to Sydney Sweeney and, you know, this stuff. Like, what's the financial incentive there, right?
American Eagle stock went up 13%.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. They did it. Like, they won.
They got what they wanted.
Yeah. So, like,
rich culture pays, man.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. That's the thing is, like, you know, the American Eagle CEO put out a statement, you know, explicitly denouncing the fact that this was some, you know, call for white, you know, America, mm-hmm. and all that bullshit that people have been saying. But, you know, I understand that. Great move by them. Put out the public statement. But on the back end, like, you know, that boardroom is high-fiving and everybody's like, hell fucking yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that, I guess my moral hang up with, like, the music one, like, you explaining it and outlining it, like, I understand it.
Yeah.
And I don't judge it. I think that it's like, okay, like, there's a lot of factors at play that I don't understand. There's a lot of psychology at play that I don't understand.
But is it because the stakes are lower there? Where when we talk into politics, it's more, you're looking at swaying an election and people's lives.
Yeah. Like, you know, some new rapper inflating their views doesn't hurt anyone. Right. But, I mean, it does hurt the rappers that don't have access to the labels, and it makes that.
There you go.
There's that argument, right?
Yeah.
And so it kind of, like, consolidates power. And then on the internet, where things are supposed to be democratized, it kind of just, like, once again, it just reestablishes the same power dynamics that have always existed.
Yes.
So there's that problem. And so you can argue that.
Which it's not, you know, election swaying.
Yeah.
But that really fucking matters. When you're talking about creatives and artists and the integrity of what art should be, like, that really, really fucking matters.
Yeah, we'd have a lot. Like, I think music in general has degraded from what it was, like, maybe to my nostalgia glasses, but, like, from what it was like 10, 15 years ago.
I always think the tactics were different. Like, in radio, there's payola. So, you know, you basically grease a radio, local radio DJ, and they'll play your record.
Yeah.
So there, I think versions of this, gaming the system has always been a thing.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's, like, a new take because we have internet and bots. But it's, I think, in an era of over communication and overstimulation, it's easier to sniff out when you feel like you're being duped. Whereas before, I think users were more left in the dark or the unknowingness of what was actually being done around the levers that were being pulled around them weren't poking out of the curtain.
Yeah. It wasn't so obvious back then. Like, oh, like, there's no way they're paying off Z100. But, like,
yeah, it's like the Wizard of Oz thing where it's like, oh, you okay.
Yeah.
Like, but whereas they may not be shocked in the 80s if they were told that existed, but today we're all behind the curtain. It's like, we know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And people openly talk about it. But, and I think what's interesting to me is that when like, being a tech nerd, you think about the internet, you think about AI, you think about all these cool technologies, and the first thought I always have is like, oh, like, this is going to make the world a better place. Oh, like the internet. I'm sure the people that invented the internet,
Al Gore,
and they were like, okay, like, we're gonna facilitate the greatest exchange of information and ideas to ever exist in human history. Like, ideas are about to get a lot better.
Yeah.
Because theoretically, that's what happens when ideas engage in a in a fair environment.
When you're creating a larger community, it creates more think, more thought. More, yeah,
it should. And so you could apply the same thing to music, where it's like, you know, you could make the argument music is better or worse or the same as it was or in quality as it was 10, 15 years ago. When you look at the internet, it's like, okay, like we created with TikTok and you could say even Spotify, the greatest music distribution technologies to ever exist in human history.
Yeah.
And music hasn't gotten that much better.
You're saying music in terms of the quality of the actual music itself or how it's created?
I mean, you can make the argument for either or. I would say that for me, the interesting thing that's happened is music sounds more similar now.
But I think that's because they're playing to, it's no longer about playing to uniqueness. I think it's more about being the best at what's already deemed good. So it's like, if I'm the best at pop, I get the most streams. I'm the queen of pop. Mm-hmm. Like same with rap. Okay, what's the hot sound of rap? Okay, let me sign the kid that's the best at that version of it. And now we have something cooking.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's less about like the...
Less risky.
It's less risk. It's like these labels, when Taylor Swift became a thing, all these other labels were like, all right, Atlantic needs their Taylor Swift. Republic, well, she's Republic. Like, you know, Sony needs their Taylor Swift. So all these other people are trying to replicate what's already multi-platinum.
Right. I was kind of just hoping for more like Tyler's. In a world of Taylor's. You know, like super unique, kind of weird, out there, still in a genre for sure.
Yeah.
You know? Still has ties to, like, I mean, he was very close to, like, you know, ASAP and that group. And like, so he has ties to like more traditional versions of the genre, but I thought that the internet would breed more guys like that and girls like that.
But
we don't really have any of that.
That risk is only worth funding when it's already... Odd Future was a movement. Like they, yeah. Clothing, a television show, you know, Tyler's numbers for his first few album sales were incredible. Like, it took that level of, you know, success to even get,
yeah, that's fair,
the push to the major to be like, all right, now you green light it, whatever you want. Which is fucking incredible. Like, it's insane that that's like the case. But
yeah,
so how does one combat the Sydney Sweeney stuff and even like this stuff? Like, what can social media that exists already do, or does that type of social media not exist, or what needs to be put in place for the purity of human interaction to become a thing?
Well, like, I think that when it comes to online interaction, there's a lot of things that are really hard to solve, and there are some things that are actually not that hard to solve. For example, I don't think the bot problem is that hard to solve. Like, the bot problem has been solved by other industries already. Banking solved it. Investment, like Robin Hood solved it.
Yeah.
You can't bot trade on Robin Hood, right? So other industries have solved it. So the question is then, why hasn't X or Meta implemented that? And it goes back to what we talked about earlier. You know, their valuations are dictated by a certain metric of user counts. To retroactively verify every user would cost them way too much money because there are more accounts than people in the world.
Yeah.
And it would slice their user counts by by an insane margin. Like, they remove a billion accounts every quarter.
Yeah. Remember years ago when Instagram did a scrub of fake accounts?
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was Justin Bieber's following went from like 200 million to like 109 or something like that, which is like, oh my God, broke boy. But like, no, it was just like that level of botting exists, you know, on to everywhere to that extent where nearly half of his followers were fake. Okay. So if they're not doing it, then what can be done to change this?
Well, they have to like add biometrics in. They'd have to basically add in, like, right, because right now it's an email phone number, right?
What would biometrics do? Just, I'm an idiot. Face explain. Scan. Okay.
Scan my face. Scan my, or like, you get even, I mean, IDs are harder because you can spoof an ID, but you can't really spoof a face. The problem with that is, you know, people don't really trust a lot of these companies with their faces.
I feel like Face ID is so commonplace now ever since iPhone just made it the lock system.
Yeah, so like Apple could implement it at the hardware level if they wanted to. Apple and Twitter could talk to each other. And
like my Chase Bank, I use my Face ID to scan into that.
So once you make an account, so like, but that's logging in. To make a Chase account, that's like, it has to be at the point of account creation, not at the point of logging in. Logging in,
okay.
You can tie Instagram to logging to your face if you want now. You can.
Yeah.
But when you create the account, you could have your face on 50 Instagram accounts.
You're saying when the day one I download the app, I have to scan my face to even just create the account.
Right. And you have to limit people to one account per person. Or you, I mean, you could create an artificial limit, like, okay, like you can make 10.
Would that be sold on like a B2B or?
Well, you could basically say, okay, like we'll give you the chance to make an account, and we and you could from that account, well, you make like three profiles. You make like a business profile, and you could like and you can like admin your way into that, but it's still just you.
Okay.
And so we have that oversight. But the second that if I say, okay, like we're gonna scan your face, but we're not gonna limit the amount of accounts you can make. Julian's making 20,000 accounts.
Yeah.
And you're going to bot into them from a bunch of different devices. So like, it doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
You have to limit the amount of accounts too.
So if I'm a user and I hear something like a service like this or an app like this that has those restrictions, why would I, if I'm already have all these other apps on my phone, what would the incentive for me to be like, why should I want to download this and engage with this as a product?
Well, I think when there's no users, there is no incentive. But if there's a community of people on an app like that, and it's like, oh, this is the bot-free Instagram, this is the bot-free Reddit, this is the bot-free insert social platform that you like, and you're like, oh, like I can go on Reddit and there's no bots. I wonder what that's like. Like you would be curious about it, you know. And of course, like, you know, you're requiring all this stuff. You probably still want to give users some level of anonymity.
Yeah,
because that's important on the internet. And so you'd probably look to encrypt it or do some fancy tech stuff to make it private. But I think there'd be a natural curiosity where it's like, I'm going to at least check it out.
A use case that I thought of that would just be probably resonate with just a younger user base is if I have a girlfriend and we have an awful breakup, but I'm like salty and jealous. And I know I heard she got a new man, but she blocked me on Instagram, but her profile is public. I could just make a dummy account and then follow, like, you know, shadow follow what they say, where I just go to her page and look at her stuff. This would, if an app like this were to exist, you wouldn't be able to make that secondary account to then look at activity of other people.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to. I mean, maybe if you have a friend who's following her, this.
Well, you'd be like, hey, if we're hanging in the same room, I'd be like, let me see. Yeah. But I wouldn't be able to then go out there and create all these dummy accounts to then get. Okay.
And I think it's good.
I think that's
like,
great as well.
If I block you, like,
get the fuck out of my life.
Leave me alone.
Yeah.
virtual restraining orders.
Yeah.
So I think there would be like a natural curiosity to see that kind of app. I think also like the idea that, and I think girls experience a lot more than guys do, but girls get like, especially like Instagram famous girls or pretty girls will get, you know, OnlyFans accounts spun up of them. Or fake accounts or catfish accounts. And so I think that having an app, having like a version of Instagram that is a bot-free Instagram.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like I can't get catfished here. Like this, maybe like someone could potentially like use Gen AI on top of that account. But like at least that's a real human being I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And so like I think that is going to be important because right now we're actually at 49.7% of the internet is bots. We're like right there.
Wow.
We're tipping. Like this year we're tipping.
Is it a me thing or am I naive to, it sounds like your stat answered my own question. When I'm online, I say to myself, I agree that is true, but I know I'm talking to real people. I know I'm interacting with actual human beings. Is it naive for me to say that knowing that nearly half of these accounts are probably fake?
Well, I think what the saving grace and the only reason people still use these apps is because they meet people in the real world. Like, if Instagram, like imagine Instagram, but remove all of your actual friends from it.
Oh, I wouldn't use it at all. Yeah, no.
You can meet people on the internet.
Yeah, I'm saying outside of my friend, I guess. Yeah, like.
Right. Take your friends out of Instagram.
Yeah.
And like, you're hoping they're real. You can go to their pages. You go, oh, they're following a certain amount of people. They're being followed by a certain amount of people. They have a certain amount of posts. That will become completely useless data in figuring out who's real, who's not real with Gen AI. Because Gen AI, I can create 100,000 accounts, Gen AI all their profile pictures, Gen AI all the, like Gen AI 80 pictures, and then I can make them all the accounts private, and I can make them all follow each other. You have no way of knowing, and then you'll have to assume that any private account is fake.
Mm.
So like the amount of digital literacy you need to tell the difference will keep getting
higher and higher, and then eventually you won't be able to tell at all unless you've met that person in the real world. Then you will, like, otherwise you'll never know.
For those that are wondering, like, what are the tells to determine if you are actually engaging with a real person or like a bot farm?
Yeah, I think different apps have different tells. Reddit is probably the easiest tell, because you can go on and see all their Reddit posts. You could see, and if it's all like one dimensional, that's pretty obvious to me. When the accounts were created is pretty important too.
Yeah.
Like if I mean, I feel like some Instagram ones are pretty obvious, where you get followed by a fake bot and it's like two followers and it's a URL in the link. I think that those are pretty obvious. If the Instagram account is public and they actually post a lot, you could probably look and see how far back they posted. That's a pretty good one as well. Like if they've posted since 2012,
yeah,
that's a person.
Yeah.
I think that those are my tells, are like, how many posts do you have? How often do you post? When was your account created?
Do you ever get, I get these a lot. Do you ever get, I always get put in these group chats with like sexy women, and it's like
Bitcoin trading.
Yeah. Where it's like, you know, just, you know, you're lucky. We chose you. We want to have a group gangbang. And I'm like, what? Click the link. Okay. And then the other one is, the other one is because it looked like I didn't fall for it. Like, oh my God, this girl wants to hook up with me. But I wasn't convinced that it was fake until, you know, I don't know what the tell was, but I think because I messaged them back, that's what it was. But a girl DM'd me, and it was a very real photo of a girl. And she said, hey, my friend and I saw you out last night. My friend is really embarrassed. She wanted me to reach out, but if you're interested, like, you know, let me know. And then I was like, I think I liked the message. I was like, haha, like, can I, good who's message, your friend? Solid. Like, what's it? And then like a message or two after that, I was like, oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
And then because I engaged with it, I've gotten so many more versions of that where it's like, this is so embarrassing for me to say, but it's never the person reaching out that's interested. It's always on behalf of the friend. Whereas I'm assuming when you follow through to a certain point, that link you need to get access to the friend is like the very phishing thing that they need.
That's the bait. I think that. And so, like, you know, the bot problem, it doesn't even need Gen AI to be a problem, because you can get catfished by someone using some other girl's pictures, and that could be a real girl.
Have you been catfished?
Yeah, like when I was like in high school.
Oh, really? I got catfished like in New York as an adult.
I got catfished. Oh, okay. Like, I got catfished twice. Once was like probably some fucking middle aged dude. I talked to for like 2 weeks.
Like sexy talk or like what's
I mean, I was 14, so I wasn't sexy talking.
All right, word.
It was some Instagram DM, some girl. I mean, she had a lot of followers and some mutuals, so I was like, this is kind of legit. But like years later, I gave up after a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Because I was like, all right, oh, let's FaceTime. She kept saying no, and I'm like, all right, you're weird for that. You're weird energy for that.
Sus.
Yeah. At that point, I'm like, all right, I'm too smart for this. But like, I saw the real girl like years later.
Did you tell her?
No, on Instagram I saw her. I didn't see her real life. I was like 10 years ago, a catfish of you asked for feet pics. Like,
ew, he asked you for feet pics? You definitely sent your boy toes. You definitely sent that guy. Nah, he's been cranking it. He's been beating his shit to your boy toes for fucking 14 years.
I did ask my mutuals, like, I was like after that, I was kind of like, yo, this is kind of weird. She was like, asked for like shit, and I was like, yo, like, I don't know you, dude. Like, FaceTime me. Like, I need to tell you you're a real fucking person. I'm not gonna yuck your yum, but like, I need to know you're a real person
before I send you these beautiful toes.
Yeah, before I send these, you know, money makers.
Yeah,
I need to know you're real. And I looked at my high school and I asked him, I was like, yo, dude, is this like, he's like, nah, that's not a real person. And I was like, why are you following her then? Like, he's still following her. You're giving her a social credit score. Like, why are you doing that? But I saw the girl later on Instagram, and she was like, yeah, like multi-million followers. I was like, yeah, like, okay.
Okay. Well, what was the other incident? Recent?
That was like COVID hinge. Yeah.
COVID catfish.
It wasn't like a full diet catfish, which is like a funny choice of words in this situation, because like, yeah, I mean, it was the girl, But it was like old six year old photos.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, it's tough. And it's like, it's like a not a small difference either.
Like, how bad, like weight or just
weight?
Yeah.
And I'm not someone that is going to like judge weight. I mean, I've had my fat boy errors. I mean, all right, like, come on. But
fat shamer.
Dude, like, I'm talking like,
you're just trying to restore Sydney Sweeney's America. That's really
no. I saw a news article about like Make America Hot Again. Have you seen that show?
No, but dude, I mean, it's tough. They're gonna flip that every which way.
It's tough. It's like a bunch of like really mid looking white people. It's really funny.
There's a new push online. Actually, a girl that we both know is very heavy into this. I will tell you off camera.
Okay.
But it's like this like newo wave of like bullshit New York influencers. And their whole agenda is just like fat shaming.
Wait.
So she's in like this niche community that's very, if I give out any of the accounts, people can find out. But like, it's like these weird, it's all just white people that create these accounts that are like restoring, it's like echoing conservative values and priorities, but through the lens of like a cool young professional in New York City, like people that are like, I work in finance in New York, but the subway's dangerous. It's like people like that. It's like people are like, you know, I drink $25 martinis.
They're psyoping
tuna tartare, but fat bitches are gross. It's like that. Like that's their whole thing is just, you know what I mean? Like I'm a young, successful white person in New York. I'm better than you. But New York sucks because it's liberal. It's like I'm the counterculture guy. I live in fucking Murray Hill. It's like all that shit.
Dude.
It's so fucking corny.
They're activating hyper right.
Yeah. They're flipping all the triggers to then like disperse.
Paid for that, right? Probably paid for that.
I don't know, but like they're hitting a community enough that like a couple of these guys have made like the New York Post, which kind of echoes those things, and it's like dating liberals in New York be like, did you vote for Zoran? I'm like, hell no. I don't believe in that Muslim bullshit. And then it's like, you know, it's like white people across like America being like, that's right, brother. You hold it down in New York. It's like, that's their target demo.
Right. Because New York is a very important cultural hub. And so they're trying to like create a counterculture.
Yeah. They're trying to be like, we exist out here, bro. We're really doing it. It's like, that's their whole thing. It's so fucking lame.
They're definitely getting paid.
I would imagine some of them have been getting paid. If not, they're probably traditionally just monetizing via Twitter's metrics,
right? Yeah, anyway. Maybe there's capitalizing on like outside
New
York, not like audiences, but I feel like in New York moving like that is like you're kind of making yourself a social pariah a little bit.
I think it's the corniest thing that you can do because it's also extremely performative, and all of them just steal tweets from other people. Like they're, none of them are actually inherently funny or create genuinely good content to engage with. All they do is cherry pick other things that have already been viral and do like a version of it that fits their narrative. It's like an amalgamation of like, I know this works over here, so I'm just going to copy and paste it to fit my life and put it over here. It's like, it's so lame.
Yeah.
It's like the fuck Jerry guy that just steals tweets and then just like puts it out, you know, that's all it is.
Yeah. There's no authenticity to those.
Not at all.
Aggregators.
The whole character you're developing is just based on successful tweets from other people. Some so much so that you're not even creative enough to change the font or the messaging at all. That you just directly copy and paste it, and then when you post it, screenshotters will just look it up and be like, sick bro, you stole a tweet from 3 years ago.
Yeah. I think like those Instagram or TikTok like tweet screenshot posts.
I hate people like that.
I mean, they can be funny, I'm not gonna lie, but like it's the laziest form of
content. You're not a creator. You don't create anything. You're just regurgitating things to your audience. You're not unique because you found it.
I'm a curator.
Yeah. It's not creative that you just retweeted something. It's the lowest form of art is reposting something somebody else created. You're not an artist. You're not creative. You do nothing.
Are there lower forms of art? What's worse
on an online environment? What's lower than just hijacking someone's content and reposting it in online art?
Anonymous hating
depends on how good the hate is.
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
You could be a good hater.
Right. You could be a good hater.
You could be a good hater.
Be a good hater. There's art in hating.
There's some good art in hating. If you're a good bully, if you're a good online bully, there's a market for that.
Yeah. Like if someone roasts me in the comments of this and it's funny, I'll like it.
I'll pin it. I'll post anything and they'll be like, they'll flame the shit out of me. And I'm like, that's amazing. Congrats. Pinned.
It's like, oh, why are Zoran's cousins on a podcast?
You hit tower one, I'll hit tower two. That's the.
I actually had some buddies at school. This is actually a really funny story. So I went to Notre Dame, super white school, right? Very white school. Kind of like went full circle on my super white suburb that I grew up in. It was a good school. That's why I went there. It's the best school I got.
I mean, it's Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's really. Like, good
you don't have to excuse going to a great academic school.
And like I spent
a lot of Sydney Sweeney's on that campus.
No.
Really? No.
They don't look like her.
Should have gone to a state school.
I visited a bunch. I have some friends at state schools. So I spent a lot of time in Queens before I went to Notre Dame. So I had been white passing in Queens for so long.
Yeah.
That like I kind of expected to go to Notre Dame and I was like, okay, like maybe they'll see me as a little ethnic, but like I am white passing.
I'm a white guy. Yeah.
I'm white passing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got a Swiss passport, dude. Like I'm not facing the same struggles that you are.
Yeah.
And so I got to Notre Dame and I'm like, I'm brown there. I'm brown. Like like the Snapchat Bitmojis?
Yeah.
Like mine was tan. And my roommate, and I love him, he's like the whitest guy ever. He goes, that's not you. And mind you, it was like the tan Bitmoji. I was like, oh dude, like, what do you mean? He took my phone, he changed it. He made it like the darkest skin tone. And I was like, dude, have you never seen a black person before? What is this? And so our freshman year, we had it was all guys dorms at Notre Dame, right? We had all guys dorms at Notre Dame.
Sick.
And yes, yeah, fire.
So tight.
Awesome. I actually spoke directly to the principal about that policy, and I was like, you know, like, because like I asked him why he did it.
You went to the principal like, sir, this is gay.
And he had office hours at the school, and like I had the mic at one point. And I was like, hey, can you explain the policy? And he was like, you know, we're really trying to create like a family environment. And I was like, I have a mom.
Yeah, what? Like, I've been around women my whole life.
Yeah, and the audience clapped, and he was like, shut up, brown boy, and I sat down.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like freshman year dorm hall, all dudes, right? And there's some like athletes in the dorm hall, but there's
a couple black guys.
One.
Really? Okay.
One black athlete. Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we all had nicknames. No, sorry. My section didn't have a black guy in it at all.
Okay.
The section next to mine did. But it was like our floor.
Section 8. No, sorry.
Honestly, there were a couple black guys in section 8 on the fourth floor.
Jesus Christ, dude, that's so fucked.
That is actually messed up now I think about it. But so we had nicknames for each other, right?
Yeah.
It was mostly white guys, but there was three non-white people in our section. Three.
What were they though?
Two Brazilians and me.
Okay, Brazilians got a nice little tan to them.
I'm not considered white
in
this environment, right? So. Can you guess what the two Brazilians' nicknames were? They're related. They're twins. They're guys. All guys, right? And can you guess what my nickname was?
You were probably just a terrorist.
Yeah, no, it was literally terrorist.
Just go, literally just terrorists. Oh my god, that's amazing.
And then like we would be in the like,
and you had no say in that. It's just like,
no, like
you also had to be cool with it.
No, I was cool with it. Like, yeah. I like those guys. They're fun.
Like, isn't it weird how that works where it's like people you fuck with, you're like, yeah,
no,
it's fine.
Like,
it's fine. Yeah.
It's like it's all about how it's said, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
and who says it.
Yeah, who says it. Yeah. There's a lot. Like I laughed when they did it.
There's
like,
a lot of nuance that goes into
nicknames.
That.
And also the other nicknames, they weren't racist, but they were like mean.
What were the other ones?
One kid, we just called him fat. And then the two Brazilians were Ola and Adios, which is
awesome.
I love that.
Terrorists.
Because like, and also the great thing about Ola and Adios, it's layered because like most people won't get the joke.
Yeah.
Is that like Brazilians don't speak Spanish.
Yeah, no, so it's Portuguese. Like, it's
so it's just like even better. But so like, and but my name was by far the worst name.
Oh, I
one,
mean,
one kid was named DJ. We called him BJ. Pretty innocent, right?
It's cute.
One kid was studying to be a priest, and we called him Jesus. I don't think he liked that very much, because he was pretty serious about being a priest and stuff.
Wow.
We had a offensive lineman, and we called him Big Snack.
That's a fun nickname. That's like,
he got
like
a fun one.
Yeah.
But like the issuers of nicknames were a little scared of him, so they didn't like want to.
Yeah, they're like, and you, he's like 6'6", 350. You're like. Big Snack.
Like he was like a 4-star recruit.
Yeah,
like we're not.
He's got a Max Prep mixtape online.
The,
you're like,
the other like big kid, we called him Fat. It's like you're you're fat. but then and then there was another kid. We called him the Freak, but he's like the most normal kid of all time.
I love doing that. That's a great bit. Is when you chastise someone as something normal. That they're just not at all. Like
we'd be out and he's talking to girls like, "Yo, is the Freak?
The Freak?
Yo, is the."
He's like the most normal dude in the group,
and the girl's always like,
"What did he do?"
And then it's like the best cock block of all time.
Yeah,
it's, so
it's a good bit. So do they still call you terrorist or what's the?
We would be like in the dining hall, like they're saying, "No," I was like, "Yo, terrorist!" And I'm like, "Yo, you can't scream that in a public." Yo, so we had to come up with a nickname.
the code name Osama.
No, it was just wrist.
That's pretty good.
Wrist. And it's like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's terrorist.
Could call it like the terror squad or like something like that. Like, I don't know. But
no, wrist was kind of cool. But then it's funny when you're at a party and it's like, oh, like they call me wrist. Like, oh, why?
Well, like, short.
It's short for terrorist. And I'm like, oh, great. But the story gets funnier because at one point, everyone in our section got an email from the rector of the dorm. And by the way, the rectors at Notre Dame were all priests. So I got an email from a priest and all my section copied saying, hey, so we hear there's some names being thrown around the section and we got some complaints about them. So we want to sit down and talk about them. So me, Big Snack, Ola, and my roommate, Virgin.
That was his nickname, Virgin?
Well, he was a virgin at the time.
So he's just,
yeah. Yeah, he's just a virgin. We just wanted him to, we just wanted everyone else to know.
To know. Yeah, that's smart. Yeah. It's good for him. Yeah. I'm sure he felt good about that.
Yeah. No, he was like, I mean, he was like a 6'4", like, you know, like in shape.
So virgin by choice.
Virgin by choice. Okay. For sure. I was his roommate. Like,
it's girls, even worse.
Yeah. It was like annoying, honestly. Yeah.
Is he religious?
Yeah, but it's like brothers. He's actually engaged now. He's had sex with this girl.
Congrats to him.
Yeah. Love you, dog.
Good job, Virg.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
Good job, Verge. So me, Verge, Big Snack, and Ola were isolated as like the perpetuators of the nicknames. So we had to go to the rector's office and one by one go in there and have a long conversation with the rector, like a representative of another representative of the school and our RA.
If I'm you, I'd go in there and be like, "You think I'm the perpetrator? My name is literally terrorist."
And so like and like, you know, Big Snack is going to lose his scholarship over this because it's like
it was like that big of a deal.
No, like it was a really big deal. They're like, we don't tolerate bullying. It's zero tolerance. You know, you guys might get out of the dorms, like that. Jeez. Kind of thing. Everyone goes in and I was going last.
Yeah.
And Big Snack comes out and he was like, "Yo, dude, like just like whatever you can do, like please help me out." And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, like we won't get kicked out of school, but you will lose your scholarship for this. Like this isn't like expelling worthy." He wasn't like a starter. He
yeah.
was like redshirting as a freshman.
It's a freshman, yeah.
Yeah. So like they're like, "Oh, we can, you know, if he's a bully, we're gonna get rid of him." So I get in there, sit down, like, "Oh, like, you know, here's some names being thrown around. We just wanna like hear it from you. It's like how these names came to be and like what your opinions about them are." And they go through all the names and they were like, "Yeah, but like no one told us what your name was."
Oh.
And I sat there and I was like,
"You can't. You got to bite that. You can't."
No.
You said it?
No. So, but like the whole thing was like, the whole conversation, I was kind of saying like, "Look, like none of us knew that anyone was upset." Like,
clearly they're upset. It's implied. You're all getting pulled into these fucking meetings.
But like before that email,
yeah.
No one of the group had come up to us and said, "Hey, like I don't like this name."
Oh, you're saying no of the kids.
It. Of the kids. No one spoke to any of us. And like we would have stopped. Like we weren't.
Yeah.
Like we thought everyone was in on it. Like we thought it was funny. Like I'm being screamed at terrorists in the dining hall. It's funny.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. If I had a problem with it, I would have said something to the guys and they would have stopped.
Or you would have just handled it. You would have blown up the fucking dining hall.
Yeah, I would have followed up.
Yeah. But, I bet.
All right, really? No, but So like my whole thing and like what all the guys before me were trying to say to the rector is yeah. like, hey, like no one told us that this was a problem and yeah. would have. And so I get in there and I was like, they're like, so what's your name? And I was like, it was terrorist. They looked dead. They were like,
God. Oh,
fuck. Like it went from a problem in the dorm hall to like an international news story.
Yeah, why would you like, say it though?
No. But I was like, but I said to them, no, but like it's on me though.
You're saying, but it's okay with me.
Now I hold the power. Though. Yeah. It's like now I can choose to make this a big deal or not.
Yeah.
So I was like, my name is terrorist. And they're like, oh, like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And if I had a problem with it, I would have told them.
Yeah, it's funny.
And then it just became, it immediately was squashed and the problem went away completely.
Wow.
Yeah. But like the names dropped. And you know who it was?
Who complained?
It was fucking BJ.
The least, like, the least offensive nickname of all of them?
It was fucking BJ.
It's literally half of his name.
Yeah. It wasn't freak. It wasn't fat. Yeah. It wasn't virgin. It wasn't Jesus. It wasn't hola or adios or terrorist. It was BJ.
That's some white boy shit. It yeah. leads to one white boy to be like,
I don't really like this one.
We like totally like isolated him after that. He transferred a semester later.
Pussy.
Yeah. Then he actually got isolated and like, we were all like, we don't fuck with you because you like snitched super hard and like you didn't talk to any of us. And like, you almost like Trevor, oh, I said that boy's name. Big Snack almost lost his scholarship and like messed up. You can bleep the name I dropped. My bad. Big Snack.
Okay. We're good. Clean. Yeah. All right. Okay. Wait, where do I want to come in?
but yeah, that's a
yeah, go ahead.
Fun story about, I forgot why I even brought that up. We were talking about, like the Zoran jokes and the race.
Yeah. Twitter. That was a good story, though.
Yeah.
On my school, when my, what was it, with my first day or first week, I went to small liberal arts college, Lafayette, super white. And on my first day, I think I was moving in. It was some mother of another student that was also moving in, sees me. Mind you, my mom and dad are there. My mom's Lebanese. She's very pale. My dad's just a black man. He's a big black guy. This woman sees me like alone in the hallway and was like, oh my God, you must have gone somewhere crazy this summer. Your tan is incredible. As I'm moving into my freshman dorm.
You should have responded in like fluent Arabic. Just,
like, she just transfers her daughter immediately. Yeah, but like that was the level of, you know, just white kids from Connecticut, or, you know, never saw a black person unless it was like on, you know, watching football. So it was just like that. She legit like touched me and was like, this tan is like beautiful.
It's like, oh, like what salon do you go to?
I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Yeah. So that was my big culture shock on that campus.
But I do think it's funny that white people try so hard to get tan, you know?
Yeah. It's funny how that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until, I mean, if you really want to, I don't want to tie it back to the Israel Palestine thing, but like a reason why, one of the many reasons why that they're looked at as people, Israelis, is because they are by white. Nature fairer skin right. than Palestinians. And yeah. it's historically, no matter what country, no matter what world conflict, whoever's darker is looked at as lesser than. I mean, there's also an active genocide going on in Sudan right now, but because that's an African genocide and the people that are affected there are black, it's seldom talked about in the news.
Yeah, it's really talked about.
Pretty fucking awful what's going on over there. But by the chance that there are literally no white people involved, it's not a story worth bringing to the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's just the nature of people that we've created that.
It's super fucking sad.
It's awful.
Yeah. It's just like, and I think it's maybe, I mean, I'm sure there's other factors that play with the Israel-Palestine conflict and that being talked
so
about.
So many. There's so many. But that's just one of like the, yeah.
No, I mean, when it comes to any conflict that involves like an African country or black people in general, it's just like, it's less cared about. Like the burning of the Notre Dame Cathedral in France has gotten more coverage than the Sudanese genocide.
Oh, yeah. They put more money. They built that shit back up. Bro, come on. You think they're going to let the Catholic Church fall like that?
Yeah.
No.
It's a building.
Yeah.
And people care more about that than an entire
than real people.
Real human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times, man.
Love that. But they can play on our football teams though.
They could. Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as they Shane Gillis has that great bit of Gillian Keeves about the bit is like he's a head coach at a school in the South and he wants to preserve white it's like at that turn of the only white players here. and then they get the shit kicked out of them by like a school that allowed black players. And then they finally, after losing, allow a black player. And then he's like, starts saying, all right, we're going to only let them play one quarter. And then you'll see the score be like, they'll be up 14-0. And then they pull out the black players and they lose like 52-14. So it's like over the course of each week by week, you're seeing in real time Shane's character loosen up on the racism. And then by the end of it, they win the championship. And he's like, I told y'all guys all along, they're not bad people. He's like, I've been saying it from the beginning. So it's like, but like, it's a good bit. It's a great premise. But also that is literally how the South, a large perception of people's towards like how they felt towards black people started with black athletes being integrated onto those campuses and winning them things that mattered to them.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when I think it was the historic game where USC came to Alabama, beat the living shit out of Alabama. White people in the South were like, maybe we need to, maybe they're not that bad.
I think they're good at
that. Literally, like there's, you know, I guess they should play. And now, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah.
But, you know, good times, man. We're so lucky to be alive.
Yeah. I mean, Notre Dame is kind of weird because like when I was there, it's like if you were black, you were probably an athlete.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to say that I did like your typical sport per se, but like on Lafayette's campus, it was annoying. It bothered me. I'm proud of my accomplishments. I'm happy with what I did. I'm blessed to have the ability to compete. But it is like one of those things where it's like, you're only here because you're, you know, an athlete. I'm like, that's not true, dick face. Like, look at my fucking GPA and my SAT score. Fuck you. Like,
yeah.
But it's like the discredit. My favorite comeback was, which would, I don't say get me into a lot of trouble, but would lead to a lot of arguments, is I went to a public school in upstate New York. I'm now at this college with you. We're in the same class. You grew up in a gated community. You went to the top private school in the country. You had private SAT prep. And look, guess who's sitting next to me at this seminar? You're the fuck up. I overachieved. You had all the shit in the world handed to you. Look where we're at. We're in the same fucking room, idiot.
That's hard.
Yeah, so I would say shit like that and be like, oh, me, I went to, make fun of where I grew up. Go for it. I'm sitting in the same fucking room as you.
Yeah.
So guess who failed?
It's like, you know, like you're saying without saying it, you're like, yeah, but like all you're admitting is that I'm way smarter than you.
Yeah, you had everything handed to you. You're not only that, you're also a legacy student. So who knows if you're even valid enough to be on this campus because your fucking dad and his dad has paid this school hundreds of thousands of dollars over three generations. And so they bought you a seat. Congrats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, anyway, it gets too dark. But we can wrap. I feel like we've been recording for a fucking hell of a long time.
Yeah,
I got to figure out how to chop this up. I usually don't edit much, but we may have to chop this up.
Yeah, there'll be a couple of bleeps and things
to
cut out of this.
Raph, I appreciate you, bro. I feel like this is great. This wasn't planned, but it felt right. Pause, and we're doing this. So there's a couple of brown boys, you know, recording the pod. Episode 29 of Something Wrong With The Podcast. Everybody have a good week. My throat's fucked up. I gotta do something about this. All right. Peace.
Bye.